Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder, and then watching students embrace a maker mindset. And I want to ask something real quick before you we dive into this podcast. First of all, if you could tell people about this podcast, just say, hey, check out creativeclassroompodcast.com, and that tells people how to find it on iTunes, which I think is now called, what, Apple Podcasts or something, on Stitcher, on Google Play, whatnot. You get the idea. And then also, if you like this podcast, if you enjoy it, drop me a line, send me an email, let me know, or leave a review on iTunes. That would mean the world to me. We're going to be diving into this idea today of the fact that often the most impractical elements of learning are what make it practical. It's a kind of paradoxical idea, and I want to dive right into it, so we're going to right now. See, schools are designed to be practical, but there is a hidden drawback to it. Innovation and creativity, those are almost always impractical because they are, by nature, unpredictable. So what if this push toward the practical skills in school, this notion that we should be using this in the future, that we need to be giving students the skills they'll need for blank economy, what if that's actually leading to learning that is wildly irrelevant and impractical? And what if these impractical ideas and skills that we're ignoring because they are, well, impractical, are actually what students need to use later in life? I want to start with this idea of the impractical idea driving space innovation. So we're going to talk about geckos. But first, every time you board an airplane, you're stepping into a vehicle that's held together by glue. The same is true of most cars and trucks and, well, spacecraft. Okay, nobody's gluing your aircraft together with Elmer's, thankfully. They probably wouldn't be able to find it, because if you've ever tried to show up on to a store and look for Elmer's glue, it's always being taken because kids are making that GAC stuff with it. But what they're using is a state-of-the-art adhesive, which is both stronger and lighter than bolting things together or welding them. And so what you end up with is a sturdier thing that flies better, whether it's fuel economy or simply getting through space better in the case of outer space, or, you know, you get the idea. And this leads to another random fact. The future of spacecraft involves geckos. I'm serious. For centuries, humans have marveled at the mystery of gecko feet. How do they hang upside down? How do they grasp objects with such strong adhesive force and then just let go so effortlessly? And why don't their feet leave any sticky residue on surfaces? Now, this isn't anything drastically unusual, right? Like, if you hang out with kids who watch geckos, they're going to ask those same questions. We had a gecko for a while at our house, and my kids would just always ask questions. They would marvel at it. We would look at, they had these geckos all over the backyard in Phoenix. They were just really common around there. And they would just be fascinated by the way they climbed, by the way they hung on things, by the way they grasped things. They are fascinating creatures. But now, with more accurate technology, scientists continue to explore the intricate details of gecko feet. And they're fascinating. And what that has meant is that engineers are currently applying these new discoveries to their latest inventions in the burgeoning field of what are called gecko adhesives. In fact, NASA is looking toward geckos for inspiration as they develop better adhesives for their spacecrafts. Now, to me, that is wild. Geckos, who knew, right? And so I want to talk about this idea of the adjacent possible. I recently listened to a surprisingly awesome podcast about glue. That's where I heard the story about the geckos. That's right, glue. I listened to a podcast on glue. And I guarantee the podcast was way more interesting than this podcast that you're listening to right now. In fact, you might want to stop, not even listen to this, and just listen to the glue podcast on Surprisingly Awesome. And so, yeah, the show lived up to its name in that episode. Glue is surprisingly awesome. But here's another reality. The impractical information in a show like Surprisingly Awesome can be surprisingly practical. There are ways that I've been inspired by listening to really bizarre, kind of useless information-oriented podcasts. I doubt a group of engineers ever huddled together and said, "How do we solve the spacecraft adhesive issues?" And then after a few minutes answered, "How about geckos? Yep, we should start studying geckos now that it seems practical." Instead, they likely borrowed from the discoveries in biology and applied it to engineering. In other words, they looked to a unrelated area of science and applied it to what they were doing. Now, theoretical biologist Stuart Kaufman refers to this idea of looking to the side or looking to the outer limits as the adjacent possible. You combine several seemingly unrelated ideas, you play around with them, and then suddenly something works. You find new uses for old things. But the idea is that every innovative idea is simply a reorganization of what's already available or a small further iteration of what's already going on. It doesn't look like an epiphany most of the time. And even when it does look like an epiphany, it's oftentimes not an epiphany. It's just a reorganization of what's already there. Now, this is the idea of mental tinkering. Stephen Johnson wrote an article, and I love the way he describes the adjacent possible right here. The adjacent possible is kind of a shadow figure, hovering on the edges of the present state of things, a map of all the ways in which the present can reinvent itself. I love this idea of a shadow future hovering around on the edge of things. That's the adjacent possible. And I love the impractical image of tinkering later on in this article that Stephen Johnson wrote about it. You play around with ideas and you try them out. Most of the time it doesn't work, but that doesn't matter. Innovation is often impractical in the beginning. The adjacent possible is an exploration into new ideas that seem inherently impractical, but not necessarily impossible. Innovation is unpredictable. And this unpredictable aspect of innovation means it's often labeled as impractical. There's this question of, am I sure this will work? And if the answer is yes, that tends to be the practical answer. But that leads you to the status quo. The answer when it's no is often what leads to innovation. Now, sometimes it leads to failure. Sometimes it leads to bad ideas, aka crystal clear Pepsi, right? But sometimes it leads to really, really awesome ideas as well. And that leads me back to geckos. As engineers reach for any possible solution for spacecraft adhesive issues, they might just pull from the studies on gecko feet. But they might not. They might find inspiration from beetle larvae or from network systems or from pine tar on baseball bats, and then George Brett would be finally vindicated. The point is that the future is often impractical. If you would ask engineers 20 or 30 years ago to predict the future of adhesives, it's doubtful anyone would have even mentioned geckos. It would not have been on their radar. They would have called gecko research impractical. Even now, as we talk about STEM or STEAM, you rarely hear people saying, "Kids need geckos!" You're likely to hear about coding or robotics or 3D printers, which are all really awesome. But what you're not going to hear about are geckos. Nobody is setting up donors choose campaigns for lizard-based learning programs because geckos aren't practical. They're not cutting edge, and they don't seem all that unusual. But they are fascinating. They are really interesting to study. I would actually argue that a class might benefit from a gecko as much as they benefit from a 3D printer. Here's the thing. We can't predict what's going to be practical in the future. Humans suck at predicting the functionality of information. We get stuck in these mental models that either assume the status quo or fail to grasp the continuity of the present tense. In other words, we think the future is going to be way too different, or we think it's going to be way too much the same. We live within the confines of the adjacent possible. That is the furthest reach that we can go. And we can't predict what innovation will look like in the upcoming decades as this adjacent possible expands. So this has me thinking about schools. Should schools be more impractical? We often define relevance as things you will actually need to use in life. And there's this laser-like focus on being up-to-date and preparing students for the future. But as I mentioned, we're not very good at predicting the future. After all, I could never have predicted something like YouTube would be available on the device I could hold at the palm of my hands, and that I would be just pressing things with the touch of my fingertips and not even have a keyboard. That would have been impossible. And in the meantime, I thought that by now we would have found a way to have flying cars. They don't exist. I thought we would have jetpacks. Those don't exist. I thought we would have a solution to making Capri Suns easier to open. That hasn't happened easier. So there you go. I love the way my friend AJ Giuliani puts it, that our goal is not to prepare students for something. It's to empower them to be able to handle anything. I'm paraphrasing him, but that's the idea. And he talks about this often. In other words, instead of trying to prepare students for futuristic skills that we don't even know ahead of time, we need to empower them to think critically and creatively. Teachers often ask, how will kids use this in the future? But this question misses a different and perhaps even more pertinent question. What new possibilities might this open up for students if they pursue it? This filter of practicality often filters out innovation. In the push to be relevant, we accidentally design lessons that prove irrelevant in the future. I remember being a kid and learning through this very long specific lesson about the, quote, right way to search for something in Google, and it's completely changed. I remember learning and memorizing aspects of the keyboard that have proven to be not important anymore. There was an obsession with some very specific skills that they really thought we would someday need to master that aren't relevant anymore. They're obsolete. And meanwhile, we miss out on those gecko feet moments that inspire wonder and creativity. So here are some ideas for how we can change that. Number one, embrace confusion and complexity. When we focus on making learning practical, we strip the learning of its confusion and complexity. But I'd argue that school should actually be more confusing. These moments when students are asking questions and thinking critically, they are the moments when learning is, quote, least practical. But they're also the moments when engagement skyrockets and students learn how to wrestle with hard ideas for a longer amount of time. That's pretty awesome. But it's also impractical. When students chase rabbit trails sparked by their own curiosity, the destination can feel like a waste of time. After all, we have crowded curriculum maps and state testing and content we need to cover, but when students chase this curiosity, they become empowered. They become deeper thinkers. Number two, go outside, even if it feels impractical. Notice that the previously mentioned gecko moment began with a sense of wonder about how geckos could walk upside down. Yes, they spent time in a lab, and of course they learned how to use the technology. But the deeply human wonder at the natural world sparked their curiosity and ultimately led to innovation. I find this interesting because the Stanford D School often makes the definitive statement that design thinking and design and creativity, these things need to begin with empathy. You always have to start with empathy. Project-based learning proponents will say that learning should always begin with a specific scenario or a profound question. But sometimes it starts outside. I mean, literally starts outside. Sometimes it begins with wonder and amazement at the universe that we inhabit. Now I get it. Our students aren't going to look at geckos and then design spaceship adhesives. It doesn't work that way. But back in January, I shared the story of how my son experienced snow for the first time and just played around with it for a week. And then this led to experimentation and ultimately creativity. And this happens all the time. When children go outside, they experience an entire world of possibilities that can't exist inside a pre-programmed screen. This is totally impractical. This will not raise test scores. But it's valuable. It's what leads to innovation. It has me thinking, you know, what if instead of virtual reality field trips, students might just need more walks out in the forest? What if a creek is as vital to creative thinking as a makerspace? Number three, tinker more. Tinkering is inherently impractical. It's the idea of making something for the sake of making something. Often when people tinker, they play around with items by mashing up unrelated concepts and trying out new things before ultimately making something new. There's a definite mashup element that goes into it. And tinkering can feel like a waste of time. But again, I would argue that play is vital for creativity. It might look like chaotic play, but when kids are tinkering, they're often engaging in curiosity, which leads to experimentation. This leads to rapid prototyping, and then that pushes more curiosity, more experimentation, more iterations. It becomes a cycle. And when I taught middle school, students worked through this cycle when we would do our rapid prototyping maker projects or cardboard challenges or anything like that. Now, these weren't always practical. In fact, some of the ideas were downright fantastical. They were silly. But in the midst of the impractical, students gained long-lasting practical skills. Students who tinker with products and ideas learn to think divergently by using materials in unexpected way. They learn how to split test their ideas through experimentation. They engage in iterative thinking. In other words, they learn to think like entrepreneurs, because every entrepreneur is on some level a tinkerer. Number four, scratch your itch, even though it feels impractical. Sometimes scratch your itch means you chase after your own geeky interests and topics through something like Genius Hour. Or it could be a topic-centered geek out blog where students choose specific areas of interest and then create multimedia content for that audience. But sometimes it's something that's not making content. Sometimes it's learning a new skill or perfecting a new craft for the sheer joy of learning how to do it. These scratch your itch moments might seem like a waste of time, but they often develop practical skills. Case in point, when I was in high school, I wanted to take theater, which I would argue is itself a makerspace. However, I opted for more practical, college-ready, college-focused, you-need-this-in-the-future kinds of elective classes instead. And now, as I get in front of large groups and speak for keynotes and whatnot, I wish I had taken theater. There are elements of staging, elements of getting in front of a group, elements of, you know, improv, honestly, that I could have benefited from. And meanwhile, I often use the very skills people told me were a waste of time when I was growing up, right? These things were said all the time. Don't be an author. You won't make any money. Quit drawing. You're not a real artist, and artists, again, don't make any money. Don't learn graphic design. There's no market for that. You're wasting your time making videos. That's silly. You get the idea. Now I find myself drawing, writing, doing graphic design, making videos, doing all of these things on a regular basis. As a professor, I did this as a teacher. I do this as a blogger, a writer. I often connect seemingly unrelated ideas from random stupid crap that I've read or listened to, like Surprisingly Awesome. And I did this from a deeply human desire to geek out on everything. I never asked myself, is this practical? I asked myself, is this fascinating? And I don't regret it. Because we can't predict what information will be relevant in the future. Imagine saying to someone 30 years ago, if you want to be on the cutting edge of space travel, you should go study lizards. Information changes. We are constantly redefining relevance. But one constant remains: who you are as a learner. Are you passionate? Are you curious? Do you find the world interesting enough to explore? These are the impractical ideas that ultimately lead to something deeply, deeply practical. Empowered learners who can think critically and work creatively and live passionately. And that is ultimately what I want to see students become in the future. Hey, thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. Again, if you enjoyed this, please leave a review on iTunes. Have a wonderful day and go make something awesome.